The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling on the MLW Radio Network, as well as on cagematch.net. It's been a while. I'm your host, Trigger. I'm back. Hi, Dylan.
I am so psyched to have you back, Trigger. I missed you so much. It's been 5 weeks. We did the math before the show. 5 weeks without Striga and all of our lives. The world needed you. When the world needed you most, you disappeared. And now you've come back and returned to us to save the day, as you are known to do.
I don't know if that's actually the case, but thank you. I'll give it my best. So we'll see where that goes. But I'm really hyped to be back on the show as well. Much like you said, it's been 5 weeks. Quickly, want to say something about the hiatus that I took, because it was basically due to my job. I was just a lot going on between late May and now, mostly because of the reports and all the grades having to be done. Then we got two graduations each year in the school system that I am in. We always got the 10 graders graduating and the A level students graduating in the within the 1 week usually. I was involved with both graduations this time, so a lot of work and time went into that. Then we had the anniversary of our school, which took a lot of work as well. And between that, there was the regular school schedule as well. A field trip. I did a trip. I went to the Netherlands. We once again went sailing there. Then there was a WXW weekend 1 week ago, actually. So basically, I hadn't been at home for a complete weekend since the weekend that we last recorded, actually. That was the last weekend that I was at home for a complete weekend. So I didn't really have much time to watch much wrestling. I told you off the air, and this has been the month where I watched the least amount of wrestling in about 10 years, just because I just wasn't at home a lot. So I had to catch up with a lot of stuff in recent weeks, and I was able to catch up with All Japan Pro Wrestling, for example, with the Dragon Gate and DDT. So I'm on par there. I haven't been able to watch a lot of Noah and a lot of Stardom either, not a lot of Yoshi in the last couple of weeks. So that's something that I still have on the menu, but we're looking at the half-year awards as well, so I have to get going and watch some stuff in the coming days there as well. So yeah, this is a nice little show, I guess, in between now with me being back and the half-year awards looming. That is going to be our next episode, and Dylan, if I'm counting correctly, this is episode number 249, so our half-year awards will be the 250th episode of the Eastern Lariat.
How about that? Big milestones coming up for the Eastern Lariat as we continue rolling on stronger than ever, actually. The award shows are some of our favorite episodes, so
yeah,
that's going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully we get a lot of votes for them, especially the revamped ones. We're coming in with the prestigious names. We're adding some prestige, add a little bit of flavor to these things. Listen, Michael Jordan and Conn Smythe can't be the only ones with awards named after them right now. I don't think they do that in, like, football.
Like, no.
in Germany, there's no like legendary award name, but in the NHL,
well, there actually is.
There's
a medal for the best youth player in Germany, and it's named after a famous German national player, Fritz Walter.
Oh, okay. Shout out to Fritz right now.
Good old Fritz.
Yeah, old Fritz, of course. But you know, in NHL, NBA, they've named the awards. Even in like Wrestling Observer, they have like the Flair, and then they changed it. There was like Flair the Thez as where, or Thez and then Flair, but whatever. You know, they have their names in the awards. So now we're entering that stratosphere. I think awards are prestigious enough. I always love the voters, like because I really do. I'm not just saying this. I'm not biased or anything, or maybe I am, but I still think it's actually true. I think the people who vote on our awards are like the smartest fans. Like they say stuff that, and they like wrestling at such a deep level that you won't get on any other show. You know, it's like how many other shows will some of these guys get shouted out on? But on our awards, you know, and it's open to everything. It could be a New Japan wrestler, it could be a Joshi wrestler, an indie guy, like deep indie, you know, deathmatch. Everything is represented in some way or another. DDT, all the promotions we talk about. We get a little bit of everything, and I think a lot of the other awards don't get that representation nearly as much. So I really love our awards for the voters, but also your votes as well. You said you're going to catch up, so I appreciate that. I think you're going to have good awards votes as well. We're going to talk about it next week. But
yes.
Yeah.
Next week, probably not next week.
No, maybe not next week. The next show.
Not really sure when we're going to do that. I really have to watch some stuff before we can do the show itself. You mentioned the votings. They are still going on, and we may end up with an MVP award that has two names to it, because
Kenta Tosh and
Mitsuharu Misawa, as of this recording, they are head-to-head with 35% to Kobashi and 33.1% to Misawa. So the voting is still open this week, and we'll see how that goes. The other awards are mostly a lock, like the Yoshi Award. Manami Toyota is running away with it. We got Best Wrestler. Tanahashi is in the lead pretty comfortably. Got the Junior. Yushin Liger is running away. Best Tag Team is going to be Kawada and Taue. Rookie is Akiyama. Foreigner, Stan Hansen. So basically, all the awards are a lock, but not the MVP. So you still got the chance to vote for your favorite. Is it Misawa? Is it Kobashi? Dylan, what did you vote for?
I voted for Jumbo right now. But I honestly think that either any of these would be good. Yeah. And on all the awards. So basically, like, the way we did it was you picked two people and I picked two people and we put them on the vote list, because you know the way Twitter votes work, it's a maximum of four, so it's like, hey, we have four, and we did it for all the awards that way. You know, most of them were legendary people.
Mm-hmm.
We did have a couple of modern people, like Okada is one of the MVP votes you can vote for. He got like 12% so far, so it's not, you know, completely washed or anything. In the Joshi Award, you had like Io and Nakajima. So you get a lot of things, but mostly legendary people. And in the MVP, Kobashi and Misawa, any one of those, I personally would be proud to represent this show's top award of the year.
Yep, absolutely. So that's a fun thing we still got going. So get up to our Twitter account, twitter.com/EasternLariat, to see the votings there. And from there, Dylan, we'll take it to the most recent event that had to do with Japanese pro wrestling, and that is, of course, Forbidden Door. It was just last night from the point where we are recording right now. I got up to watch the show. I got up at 1:30 in the night, went to bed at 6, got up again at 9, and here we are in the afternoon, German time, talking about Forbidden Door, a show that has a rating of 8.72 on Cage Match as of right now. Dylan, what was your impression of the show overall?
I thought it was a great show. There was some stuff that I didn't love, you know, particularly with some of the finishes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that had me scratching my head a little bit. But, you know, AEW, they're a good company. I'm not an AEW hater by any means. I think that they have a lot of good things about them, of course. mainly the thing that a lot of people have been talked about lately with them has been their backstage drama with certain people. And he was on the show as well earlier. Punk and Kojima had their match on there. But this show I was super hyped for. I will say I thought they did a way better job of hyping like the build-up to this show than last year's version. I thought they had much more stuff going into this show that was interesting than what we had last year. I was very surprised that they ended it with Brian and Okada over Ospreay and Omega, just because that had the title involved in it. And I think that kind of hurt the main event, actually.
Yeah.
You could see, actually, and also the fact that one of the participants broke his arm with 10 minutes left in the match.
Very unfortunate. Yeah, I was really sad about that, because this match, Okada and Danielson, it just had all the implications of being a monumental dream match for the ages, because I think both men went into this match with a mindset to deliver the best match possible on top of this show. And sadly, about 10 minutes in, Bryan Danielson broke his arm. But he said it on the press call, or whatever they call it afterwards, that he had the choice, two choices basically, to stop the match or to just go through the pain. And he decided to go through the pain. And I think you gotta give it to Danielson for doing that, for delivering this match that was on the marquee. So he went through the match. And in the end, it ended up being a really good, good match. But unfortunately, it just could have been much better. You could sense it through the match that there was something off during the match, because suddenly like the pace changed completely, but you didn't really notice it. And that's another feather in the cap for Bryan Danielson, that you really didn't see what went wrong with him.
Yeah, grading it on a meta level as these two as wrestlers, both of them deserve credit, Okada as well, for being able to work this kind of match. And like I said, this match is something 99% of wrestlers would be like, they could dream they could have a match this good, pretty much. You know, it was still like an 8 out of 10 type of match. A cage match is 8.25. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't what it could have been, because coming in, it's like, this could be one of the best matches ever. You know, it's kind of like the expectations. And it probably was never realistically going to be able to live up to that. It's just nothing. Nothing can, right? Like, you know, nothing can live up to the kind of expectations it had. But obviously, with the arm break, hurt it. And by the end of it, pretty much everybody was saying they got to do this match again to let them have, like, don't have the deck stack against them so much, because the crowd was kind of dying. Like, I mean, they tried, you know, but they were a tired crowd.
Yeah, and Danielson also talked about that on the press conference. He said that he actually didn't plan to go back to the yes chance, but he noticed that the crowd was so flat and he needed something easy to get the crowd going again, because he was too hurt to really go out and do something spectacular anymore. So he went back to the yes chance and it worked out. There was this moment where he like brought his real life medical history into the match, and I think that didn't work at all and didn't get over. No, fans were really concerned, and it wasn't a good idea. Really not a good idea. It completely brought me out of the match. And,
basically, he
going back.
Yeah, they were teasing him having a seizure.
Yeah.
That's not a fun thing to do at all.
No, not really. That was the main event. The match that got talked about the most definitely on this one was once again the Will Ospreay and Kenny Omega match, much like on Wrestle Kingdom. This has a rating of 9.59. I've seen people say that this was the better match in comparison to Wrestle Kingdom, and people calling it their match of the year, obviously with a high rating like this. And I was very, very much into the match itself. I thought it was a spectacular match, different than the Wrestle Kingdom match, of course, mostly because Will Ospreay was in the driver's seat for most of the match, in contrast to the Wrestle Kingdom match, where he was completely dominated by Kenny Omega. The weird part about all of this was Don Callis, though, and I couldn't get over it. Him being there made sense in storyline with Kenny Omega, but it took away from the match for me, because this Don Callis stuff certainly has its place within the weekly shows that AEW does. But this Forbidden Door show, this is a non-canon show for AEW, basically. It's not part of their regular schedule. They hyped it up 2 weeks before the show, of course, with some angles and some video packages and stuff. But this really didn't need to be on the show. And he interfered multiple times. The most infuriating part is that he was thrown out of the building, from ringside, and he just came back, and nothing happened, and there was no consequences to that. It didn't directly lead to the finish, but in some moments, it just actively distracted from the match, and that, in my opinion, was hurting the match quality. And for that reason, I really can't say that this one was better than the January one.
No, I totally agree with all of that you just said. I feel the same way. You know, the stuff with Callis really took things down, in my opinion. It was still, obviously, for an action type of match, that was spectacular, obviously. Like, they did so much stuff. Nobody can doubt the effort of these two, I would say. Like, say what you want. You know, you could argue, maybe if anything, they did too much, like some people might say. But nobody can argue the effort that they put in, and that's something I always value a lot. But to me, the Callis stuff was really lame. It took away from the match. And, you know, I think if they had just cut all of that out, cut a bunch of stuff out of it, you could have made this a lot shorter and still just as good, pretty much. Because a lot of times early on in the match, they worked the match kind of calling back to their January 4th match, but with Ospreay as the bad guy, you know, the heel in the match, instead of the babyface that he was in Japan. So it was a really good match. Like, I don't want to, like, bury it or anything. It was still well worth watching overall. But there was a lot of stuff there that I can't give it that kind of match of the year level rating when there was so many things I can point to that weren't good about it, in my opinion. So I still, like, much like the main event, great match. Like, nothing, you know, it's not like I'm saying don't watch it. But for me, when you talk about the flaws that you brought up, you know, I think that I definitely preferred the January 4th match. I thought that was, like, a legitimate match of the year level match. In all over the world still. But this one, I like, by the end of the year, I'll think back to the January 4th match much more.
Yes,
this one.
Absolutely. Yeah. So these were two of the main matches on the show. And it's really funny that this big match that everybody was waiting for in Ospreay and Omega was for the IWGP United States Championship. That is really not a title that is in any way, shape, or form a focal point of New Japan Pro Wrestling, nor has it ever been, to be quite honest. And then we got two world title matches that were the first and the fourth match on this card. And both of them completely failed in comparison to the two matches that we just talked about, especially the IWGP world title match, because it was such a cold match with Zanada defeating Jack Perry in 10 minutes. There really wasn't anything to the match. Jack Perry tried to, like, get the crowd ready up by doing some of Zanada's moves. He even went to Zanada's playbook in turning on his friend after the match. But the match itself really didn't do anything. And that also combined with the AEW world title match in the opening match raises the question, Dylan. When you have world champions that are not focused on a show like Forbidden Door, wouldn't it be better for the champions not to appear in a world title match? I mean, they could do it in tag team match. They could have done Zanada teaming with MJF against Tanahashi and X, for example, without the world title on the line. Because in my opinion, it made the champions and the world titles, both world titles, look bad that they were completely outshined by the bigger matches on this card.
Well, par for the course for MJF's title reign. I remember at Double or Nothing, his match was not in the main event. It was actually the Anarchy in the Arena match.
Mm-hmm.
And to fair play, I mean, that four-way, listen to the show we did, me and Sandre did on Wrestle Update covering it. The four-way was a great match. that he was in, and the main event was a great match. But that was what everybody was looking forward to, was the Anarchy match. The build up to that title match was not very good, like not very well received, at least. And I mean, it's Sonata. At the end of the day, he's a champion, so it was destined to be that way. At the end of the day, it's very, very rare you'll see. Like, even remember when he won the title on Sakura Genesis, we came on here and I said that was a fine match. Don't get me wrong. Like, when he won the title over Okada, but it was like the fifth best match on the show. Like, you know, of a stacked card. Don't get me wrong. But you had the tag match, the women's match they had on that show, the three way. Zach had that big match with Umino. You had the junior match with Robbie Eagles. So it's like you get all this stuff. Of course he's going to get overshadowed. Those guys are way better than he is as a wrestler. And Jungle Boy, I mean, he's pretty unpopular. And they seem to be recognizing that and capitalizing that.
They had to change his character around, and they did. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, for AEW's sake, that's a good thing. MJF, I mean, you know, it is what it is with them, but I think that's a big problem with AEW. If you look at the history of their company, their world champion is often the coldest guy on the show. Like, if you look at their history of their title reigns, look at Hangman's title reign. Like, you know, there was a lot of criticism for that. Punk always getting injured when he was champion. They had to go back and forth, 1 minute matches and stuff like that with Moxley. Besides Moxley, you know, the champion has always got his fair share of criticism, dating back to Jericho in the first reign. So, the championship is something they could really work on. I think they're not doing a good job of that right now with MJF and Adam Cole's promo that they had last week. They're tag partners. Can they get along? I mean, that's what we all need to know.
Oh, yeah. Wrestling. Dylan, can they coexist?
Yeah, can they coexist? So that right away makes me totally uninterested in anything that's going on with that title right now.
I also think that the MJF character and the title run right now is very inconsistent as well. The narrative doesn't match, in my opinion, because he defeated Tanahashi in this match, and he one part of his character is that he is this cheating heel that gets away with anything and beats these much better wrestlers, right? For example, the match against Bryan Danielson, the Ironman match, where everybody said, okay, Danielson is the much better wrestler, he'll beat MJF, but MJF, he snuck his way out and he cheated and he won in the end. And that's the one part of his character. But then another part of his character is that he claims to be the best wrestler as well. He points that he has had the best Ironman match. He claims that he has had the best Doc Collar match. But then the match that he had with Tanahashi wasn't good. And part of that is, of course, just we can't get around to talking about it, Dylan, once again. Tanahashi just, he didn't have a good weekend. But MJF wasn't able to like deliver a good match with Tanahashi either. And then, while he claims like to be this great wrestler, his match on this card completely gets overshadowed by three more matches that were way better than his match.
I think he should go out and say he had the best Tanahashi match of all time. that he should use that in his
that
promo.
That would be a great promo. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, exactly. I did love when Punk came back. He was like, I don't brag about having the best match. I won best match.
Let me rephrase. Actually, it got overshadowed by five more matches on this card, actually.
Yeah, all the matches, pretty much.
Not all of them, but
yeah. Well, except for the women's match and the Naito match, the six-man tag. But all the other ones were better. Even the Sonata match was even a little better.
It was better, yes.
It pains me to say that with Tanahashi there. But, you know, I said it on the last show with Dean, when it comes to G1, because I feel like we're in the same role every year. and just like I said, until I see it with my own eyes, I'll never believe it. But this is the year that, because like before, in every other year, I had full faith that Tanahashi would deliver, and he did. Like even last year, I mentioned on the last show, he had the great match with Goto. You know, he had a lot of great matches. You know, on last year's show or last year's G1. This year, I'm really not. It's pretty shaky. You know,
yeah, like it's getting rougher and rougher around the edges when you see him perform. I mean, they incorporated that into the matches that he had over the weekend with Swerve and Tana and MJF, that he wasn't able to balance on this different top rope that AEW has. So that was pretty well done. But except for that, it's just he didn't have the energy that he usually has in singles matches.
You know, Father Time is undefeated. Yeah. We knew this day would come, and I've been holding out longer than everyone else, I think, Tanahashi. And like I said, I feel like I've been proven right and justified most every year. But this one, like I said, I'm still going to throw my hat in with Tanahashi and think that he can deliver a great G1. And he's got good opponents that he's comfortable with, yeah. like Goto, Tanahashi, Zach. So I think he can still deliver. But like I said, this is the year that I'm not as confident as usual. And this may be the year you can finally gloat and say that you called it.
Yeah. Final talking point on Forbidden Door for me is the 10-man tag match.
That was my match of the night.
Yeah, love a great multi-man match, especially this one that had basically everyone in this match had a storyline with someone else from the other group, and you could just sink your teeth into so many different details of the match. For example, just Eddie Kingston being so conflicted with John Moxley because he's his friend and he saved him from the super kicks from the Young Bucks. Takeshita completely destroying Tomohiro Ishii with his forearm. Shota Umino and Takeshita working well together, actually. Shota looked a little bit out of place with this group, but in the match itself, he played his role well. Moxley just being there. Wheeler Yuta also had his power. The Young Bucks, when they went against Takeshita, I think Matt was it, when he did a super kick on Takeshita, he said, "Go to hell!" Adam Page, of course, being there with Wheeler Yuta. Adam Page and Konosuke Takeshita is going to be a great program down the line. This had so much in 21 minutes. I got to agree with you. This probably was my second best match of the night.
You don't agree then, because this is my match of the night. You totally disagree.
I totally completely disagree with you. Yeah, this is the worst match of the night. No,
you didn't say it's the worst, but yeah. To me, this is my favorite match. I mean, those other two, there's stuff I can point to that dragged it down. This one, I really have no complaints at all about it. I think it was basically perfect for what they tried to do. And the best part, like all that stuff you said was cool and all, but the best part of it is, who got the pin? Ishii got the pin. That's fucking awesome. He's not a part of the storyline, but who cares? It's Ishii
getting
a big win. Yeah. It's Ishii getting a big win. He never gets those. So here we get this, and it was freaking great. So I love this match. Maybe not as chaotic as the Anarchy match with everyone they did last year, but as a wrestling match, I loved what they did here. The 5-on-5 match, you had so much cool stuff going on. Everybody worked their asses off. The crowd was going crazy. Takeshita, man, that guy is a superstar. If you listen to our Wrestle Update show we did about all of this, I was very skeptical of him turning heel. I didn't think that was the best use of his talents. But I was so wrong.
Yeah.
Because he's a great heel. They did that big angle a couple weeks ago at the end of Dynamite where he had his spot where everybody brawled and he ran out and cleaned house. Yeah. He had such a great swagger to him. I was so impressed. I mean, I've always loved his talent and think highly of what he could do in the ring and how he carries himself. But even as a heel, it's like, man, there's potential there. I love the idea of giving him a faction. They've teased. It seems like they kind of had to back away from that a little bit because they had to build to this Forbidden Door show. And hopefully they can get around to that. Because if they can surround him with a lot of guys and make him feel like a star, the sky's the limit for him as a performer with Don Callis with him. Mm-hmm. The no music entrance I think is awesome. And I didn't like his new theme either, to be honest with you. It's like, because his first thing to me was like one of the best in all of wrestling. Curtain Rises. But then the one they gave him was like, oh, we're going to rip off Sekimoto's theme and give it to him. And so they cut that crap out. They give him no interest. Just crab boos him when he comes to the ring.
Yeah, and that's part of the deal. I mean, they didn't give him a song because they bank on the fans booing him out of the building.
And it worked. Yeah. it's worked so far. And the BCC, great faction. All of them did great. I have no complaints about them. I love that match. Hopefully they can get around to doing some more of this stuff. I mean, we saw BCC in New Japan on a Dominion, so hopefully we can see more of these guys do stuff in the future in New Japan.
Maybe there'll probably be some multi-man matches on the G1 final show.
Yeah, so, I think Moxley would definitely be involved. Yeah. If not Wrestle Kingdom, in other shows.
Exactly, yes. So that's going to happen. I wonder what Takeshita will be like when he's on the DDT show in late July, where he faces Yuki Ueno, a singles match. I'm guessing he's going to play the same character. It's going to be interesting if John Callis will be joining him.
That would be very funny.
Yeah.
Don Callis and DDT. Yeah. I think he already teased on Twitter he's probably going to be more of a heel-leaning type of guy.
Yeah.
In that match. So I do expect
Definitely is an Iron Man heavy metal title reign for Don Callis.
Maybe so. You can't count it out. Well, you know, you never know what's going to happen to DDT.
Yeah. So part of this match, of course, was one of the participants in the G1 Climax that is about to start in mid-July, Dylan, and you. Two of them, actually. Yes, that's right. And you already talked about the G1 on the last episode you did with Dean. Great episode, by the way. I really enjoyed your look at the G1 Climax from different angles. And I don't want to go too deep into that because you've already done that, but I've also got my very early ideas of what the G1 Climax is going to look like, in my opinion, because I'm still going to do the regular pick'em that I will do with Flosh. I don't know if Mobo will be on the show as well, but we always do that on Straight Wrestling. The first G1 pick'em was in 2009, by the way, and we're still doing that. So, I looked at the blocks, and I picked my two who are advancing, in my opinion, in all of these four blocks, and that is, for me, in block A, Kaito Kiyomiya and Zanada, with Kiyomiya winning the block. Block B, Okada and Ospreay. Okada winning the block. Block C is for me Shingo Takagi winning and David Finlay the runner-up. And block D, Tetsuya Naito and Zack Sabre Jr. as the runner-up. Which would then result in the following quarterfinal matches on August 10. Kaito Kiyomiya versus David Finlay. Katsushika Okada versus Zack Sabre Jr. Shingo Takagi versus Will Ospreay. And Tetsuya Naito versus Zanada. Then I thought, of course, the match that is looming is the Kiyomiya versus Okada one, and that would be the semifinal. And the other semifinal then would be Ospreay versus Naito. And I've not decided on what my final is going to look like. A lot of people are looking towards Naito winning the G1 Climax, but I can also see Ospreay being in a big position this year, much like you brought it up on the show, that is one of the ideas that you have in the back pocket that you don't think is very likely, but could end up happening.
Yeah, Ospreay is kind of, I think, in my mind, they're going to get to Naito versus Okada at the Dome. Like, you know, so that would make sense. Naito beats Sonata, gets a title shot, wins the title in October, and Okada wins the G1. You could do something like that. My idea for Ospreay is that Omega would
show. Okada has won the G1 in the last 2 years, though.
That's Okada. He can win again. That's fine.
Yeah, really, I don't think that Okada will be in the world title picture for Wrestle Kingdom because they have so many different options for him on the table.
Yeah.
For Wrestle Kingdom, and none of them really involve anyone that is close to the world title right now.
Especially now with this Bryan thing, you know, that would be a match they could set up as well.
Sure.
I definitely think Ospreay's a possibility, you know, like winning the G1 and then Omega could make his return, and you know, that's kind of how I set up, like Omega, Ospreay at the Dome for the title, like that big blow-off, like for the big title, which I think would be a worthy main event of the Dome. I just don't see how any way they could have put Sonata in the Dome main event, to be honest with you. Like, there has to be a plan to get the title off of him before that. Like,
that's why
exactly. Like, there has to be a way to get that. So Naito and Okada would make the most sense to me of getting there. But you're right, Okada has so many options. But then if it's not him, who at the end of the day?
Yeah, the logical choice would be the third match of the trilogy between Ospreay and Omega.
Yeah, so yeah, I think that's a very big possibility. Like, the more we get closer to it, the more I think it's actually very possible.
And if you have that match, and you have Okada versus Danielson, you're basically good with what you have there.
Yeah, then what does Naito do on the Dome as well?
Well
at the end of the day. Well, you know, he has been... downplayed, I think, more than people give credit for in New Japan the last couple of years. You know, if you look at his run last year, he really wasn't a big factor in G1 too much. No, I mean, not that he wasn't a big factor, but it's just he's obviously very popular, the most popular guy, right?
Yeah.
But he, a lot of times, is more and more as time goes along. He's not a main event constantly, you know. When they need to in G1, they'll put him in big matches because he's the most popular guy. But he's not used constantly in that position. So I think it's interesting. Yeah, you know, I think the G1's very interesting this year. I like the four-block format. I have no problem admitting that. I think they actually improved it greatly this year, too, by linking the blocks together. That's a big reason why last year sucked so much to a lot of people. In my opinion, isn't the four blocks. That's what everybody pointed to. But I think it's because they did it so out of order that it messed things up to where, like, one guy would wrestle five, six, seven matches, and the other guy would have, like, two or three. That sucked. And now this year, we won't have that issue. So I love the format. The tournament itself, I think, is mostly good. I wish that they had formatted the blocks a little different, in my opinion. You know, I think you know, A-block specifically, there was no reason to put all of the new guys in the same block. You know, Yeah, so because now you end up with D-block where it's like all rematches. You know, Tanahashi versus all his old favorites, like pretty much. Do you have a vibe check? Like, never mind who you think is going to win the tournament. Like, do you have a vibe check for the tournament right now?
I really like Block C, by the way, because Block C is basically, when you go way back, David Finlay and Aaron Hinari were in these opening matches. And they always said, during the G1 climaxes where they weren't involved in the tournament, and they always said, that's Block C. And now Block C is a reality. And David Finlay is ultimately going to advance in Block C. So I really like that. I agree with you. Block A, they got all these new matches, and Block D, all the... Well, you could say that Block D is like the soul food block of the G1 climax, because you really know what you're getting, and there's a lot of but not interesting matches, but you know what you're getting with the matches like Tanahashi and Goto, Zack Sabre and Cobb once again, Zack Sabre and Tanahashi, Zack Sabre Goto. Block A is very interesting with all the new guys in there. It's kind of a trailblazer block who advances there with Block B being, with Tangaloa and being there, probably not the best, but Okada, Ospreay, Taichi in there, Phantasmo, that should be very interesting. So I'm really looking forward to the tournament. These blocks are way different. That's cool, too.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, they spread it out decently. You know, they tried to put good guys in every block, but there's also some bad guys in every block too. You know, so they kind of spread it out. I was kind of hoping they might do like a weird block with a bunch of people that I didn't like in there. Pretty much like you know certain people in there. But you know, overall it's an interesting tournament. I think it's really cool. I love the format. Kaito being in was a game changer. You know, got a great reaction from the crowd.
Yes.
Missing the N1 to join G1, exactly. Which is very interesting when you think about it. That's a thing a lot of people are going to be looking at, is what is he going to do? Is he going to beat Okada? And I think that's going to be an interesting story to tell overall. Obviously, that's a big thing for the whole year. In February at the Muto show, I've been critical about that match, and justifiably so, I would say, considering, you know, not long after we had fans running in the ring on Kaito after that. So... they had the thing at the All Together show, so they kind of set this up to where that's the natural semifinal, I think, is those two going at it. Well, you know, I could definitely see Kaito winning that match, actually, for the reasons you said about Okada. Like, he doesn't really need to win the tournament in general. So you could have Kaito make the final, and even him losing would make a lot of sense at the end of the day. You know, like that would still be an upgrade for him from where he was at. You could hang his hat on it. Do you think that there's any truth to the idea that New Japan wants to sign him from NOAH?
I can see that. And that would explain why NOAH have pumped the brakes on him in the last year or two.
I wonder if they... I can't imagine they would know that a year or two ago. I think that they made their bed with him. Well, it would be more accurate. Like, they did badly. He wants to leave. And how can he not want to leave?
But maybe they are very open about these things when they communicate. Maybe he was open about it and said, "Hey, this is not working for me. I want to leave."
Maybe I think now it. That might be happening. Like yeah. I said, I don't think when they started the Muto deal.
Not that long ago. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, well, I think because they did all that stuff, he's like, because like when he was the champion, he looked like he had a super great future and things, and then everything went to hell. And, you know, this last title reign, like I said, the match with Okada, that was like a character assassination, pretty much. And it really hurt him and the company. And the thing is, there's nothing they can really do to rehab him from that. At this point. In New Japan, he can, though.
He can, yes. That's the thing that you brought up on the last show as well. You can clearly see that the New Japan fans know who he is, and they think that he is a guy from the reaction that he got when he was announced for the G1 Climax. And I guess some of them know what happened to him in Noah, and of course a lot of people saw what happened to him in the Okada match. Still, though, him being getting this great reaction is a testament to what he is able to do when given the ball. So it's going to be interesting what he's going to do in the G1. I really think that he is going to end up on top of the block, because it wouldn't really make sense to put in the tournament if he would just, much like Dean put it, if he would just end up with 4-3 in the end and just goes home with nothing.
That would be kind of hilarious, but I would feel bad if that. Let's say he faces Okada, because I think pretty much everyone thinks that's going to be a semifinal. Let's say Okada just beats him.
Yeah.
I think that would also be.
It would be even worse, yeah. Actually.
Yeah, exactly. So I think. But, you know, that's the thing. Like, if he's just going to go back to Noah, like, I wouldn't say it's guaranteed they're just going to let him beat Okada at the end of the day, by any stretch of the imagination. I like Dean's idea, though, that money may have to change hands for something like that to happen on there. But I don't think it's a guarantee he beats Okada. If they don't want him like that, if he beats him, then they definitely want him. Like, and maybe he doesn't want to go. Like, we don't know that. Maybe he wants to be loyal to Noah on there.
We saw how few wrestlers in the last couple of years have beaten Okada, and exactly. it was brought up during the press conference as well. And I looked it up yesterday too, when the match happened and when Okada tapped out. He hadn't tapped out in 8 years. The last time he tapped out was to Shinsuke Nakamura in the G1 in 2015, final block match.
To the Shining Triangle. He brought back his old finisher.
Yeah,
Black Sabre Names. That's the only time he ever tapped out in New Japan.
Yep, and he's not losing a lot.
No. That's never been his MO in New Japan. Have you not listened to the show for 8 years? 7 years?
It's crazy how that works with being a star in wrestling, right?
Yeah,
you win a lot of matches. So complicated.
Look at the other guy who is always heavily pushed in his company that Noah brought in, had an immediate sellout. As soon as they brought him in the first time.
Yeah, it's that's the reason that I think that there might be something to it, because if Kiyomiya really gets the win, you see that New Japan thinks a lot of him and probably wants him in, because Okada is very valuable to them. And him losing to Brian Danielson, in my opinion, clearly points to the direction that Okada is getting his win back at the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, absolutely. I could easily see something where this all, like, let's say that Kaito just goes back to Noah. I could easily see his path being Okada faces Kaito on January 1st, and then faces Brian Danielson on January 4th, and then that gets both wins back.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or Kaito could just go to New Japan, and then maybe that'll be the dome match, and maybe they do Brian and Okada at Wembley, like, you know,
Brian and Okada at Wembley. Hmm. I don't think that's possible because of his broken arm.
Yeah, you might be right about that, yeah.
He said 6 to 8 weeks.
That's true, yeah. That would be right in the time frame.
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if they wanted to do it, they could, but they might not want to.
Yeah.
Yes. They don't need to.
No. They could do anything they want on this show.
Yeah, exactly. But
put Serpent in the main event.
They could do that. I don't think that's going to happen, but it's possible. But Kaito's future is going to be very interesting to watch at the end of the day, because I do think that in the next 6 months or so, we're going to see a lot about how his future looks and is going to play out. And like I said on the last show, to me, I don't actually think he's that valuable to Noah with how they booked him. Like, I don't think they lose a lot if he leaves. Like, he's not really a draw at this point. And for them, I think he means way more to New Japan. His future is way brighter. And now with the way things are going with Noah, I think they've set up stuff to where other guys will be handling that crown. And Kaito's an amazing wrestler. You always want him on the roster. But I think they booked him so poorly after that Okada match. I don't think he really has a lot of drawing power in Noah, personally. I think he has much more in New Japan.
Yeah. Agreed. So, let's see who is valuable to Pro Wrestling Noah, Dylan. Because they also announced the lineup for, not the lineup, but the participants, for their big tournament of the summer, the N1 Victory 2023, starting on August 6th and running all the way to September 3rd, exact same day last year, where we had this great Kiyomiya versus Hideki Suzuki final.
Yeah.
Man, that feels such like a long time ago.
Yeah.
Man, different world, definitely, with Kaito. Yes, two blocks here, and no semifinals, just the first one advancing from the blocks, if I'm correct.
Yeah, you are.
With block A, the champion, Jake Lee, Kenno, Masa Kitamiya, Jack Morris, Yoshiki Nomura, in the first time, actually. Oh, was he in there a couple of years ago? He wasn't there last year, definitely. Timothy Thatcher, Adam Brooks from Australia, and Yuki Yoshioka from Dragon Gate, which is one announcement completely from left field for me, and I guess for a lot of people observing this. There's going to be a lot of fresh matches in this block with Brooks and Yoshioka. Very interested in what Yoshioka is able to do and how he is treated in this tournament, because usually when these Dragon Gate guys are brought into other companies, they are brought in as attractions. Noah has been a bit different with Masaki Mochizuki, for example, because he has been national champion once, and he has been in the tournament as well. So they kind of treat the Noah guys, Dragon Gate guys, they bring in a bit differently. You can see that with Eita as well. Eita now, of course, a freelancer, but when he was in Noah for the first time, he was with Dragon Gate still. So Yuki Yoshioka Brooks will be giving the tournament lots of fresh matches. Then we get Kenno and Jake Lee, of course. It's going to be interesting who the champion in the end loses to. Would definitely also benefit him and his run if he's just able to go to the finals and win the whole thing as champion. That could be one of the moves that they play here. But yeah, what's your opinion of this block?
First of all, I want to shout out Dean again. We mentioned him on the last episode of the free show. Me and him just did a show about Green Journey, the show with Jake versus Sugira. Like, that was a great match. Talked about Kento coming in, Kongo breaking up, all kinds of stuff going on in Noah right now. We covered all of it in depth on the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. So you get a lot there for that. So I want to shout that out real quick. A block to me, I got to say, overall, I really like this tournament. I think that
looks good.
Yeah, like what I said about the G1, where each block has a lot of good guys, but they have some bad guys. So every night there's going to be at least one or two bad matches on the show, you can guarantee. With this tournament, there's two guys that I would say are bad, and they're both in the other block. Neither one is in A block. So this one is all hits to me. You look at the way it goes. I said it on the Patreon show. I'll say it here. I think Jake has done an admirable job as champion. Like, I think he's done, you know, he's done much better than I think a lot of people thought he would.
Much better than I thought initially. Like, didn't believe that he would have been champion in Noah, to be quite honest. I said it here on the show. I was questioning the ceiling that he had in Noah, but they proved me wrong.
Yeah, even then, I knew he would win the title, but that was only because Kaito was buried so much that I was like, he can't be the champion. Like, it has to be somebody else, and he just happened to be that guy. But I've actually, ever since that Kaito match, all three matches he's had, I thought, has been better than the last. Like, Nakajima, then Marufuji, and now this. I think he's done a good job. The group is over, good-looking guys, mm-hmm. and he's the head of it. he's not a draw really as champion. Like, there's no real evidence of that.
Yeah,
but he's a good worker, and like that's always been my MO with him. I've always said I like him as a wrestler. Like, I just think in All Japan, the Total Eclipse stuff really took him down, in my opinion. And then, you know, he just isn't that guy, like, to capture people's imaginations. But I like his wrestling all the time, pretty much. Like, I don't have any criticism of him in the ring. I like him as champion. But I do think, ultimately, this block is awesome. Work-wise, you get Timothy Thatcher in. He was going to be in last year, but couldn't because of the visa issue.
Yeah.
I got that worked out. Inamura, I think, is great. He wasn't in last year because they're stupid.
That was so weird last year.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
He was in the Fire Festival instead.
Yeah, Fire Festival 2 months before the N1 final.
couldn't do both tournaments.
No, of course not. But yeah, I think it's great. I think Kaito not being in the tournament actually totally directly benefits Inamura, because mm-hmm. now he's going to be that new, like, quote-unquote young guy, even though he's like 30 now, but the quote-unquote young guy that the fans rally behind and want to see succeed. And I don't know if that's going to happen in this tournament, but I think see, you don't have any faith.
No faith in this. No. No.
But I understand why. Yeah. I would say Yoshioka, I think I like him a lot as a wrestler. I know his title reign was controversial. Like, some people liked it and some people didn't. I thought he was a great champion and one of their best workers, like, in Dragon Gate, to be honest. Mm-hmm. My issue with this is, did we have to announce this a week before his Kobe World title match at the end of the day?
Good point.
Yeah, like, couldn't we have just said X and then announce it? Yeah. Like, he could have lost it immediately and said, hey, I'm going to Noah to the N1 to redeem myself or whatever. Because I think there was a legitimate possibility you could convince yourself that there was – he could have won that title and turned heel on Kikuta at the same time if you look at the Dragon Gate deal. Like, but now it's like, okay, well, I guess he's just going to lose. I mean, the match wasn't built up at all, so this basically was a punt like for Dragon Gate on this. And hopefully it's a good match, and we'll see what he does in the N1. But I do think he'll get respect in the block. You look at guys like Keno, he can match up size-wise with. Brooks is another one. He's not going to be completely overshadowed. There are bigger guys here, too, that he is going to have to overcome. I don't know how he'll be, but I could see him definitely getting at least 4 wins, you know, in this block. I think he'll get respect. So the block is really good. Brooks, I've seen him. I haven't seen him a lot lately. I mean, since the pandemic happened.
Years ago
we've seen him, mm-hmm. but not lately. I don't know what he's been up to, but hopefully he's in. What I saw before, he was a fine worker. I actually saw him, like, when he was really young in Australia. He was, like, a prick heel. He had, like, the girl valet. I think it was, like, Pollyanna or something. I remember watching those videos on YouTube, and I saw him. And then he actually made it out of there into bigger stages. He had a match with CMLL a few years ago, like literally a one-off match. It was like him and Mecha Wolf versus Chavez Brothers, and it was a great match. He was in Ring of Honor, did some stuff.
Yeah, he was scheduled to debut for Ring of Honor, but then the pandemic hit.
Yeah, that really took away his opportunities. Yeah. Now he's got another one. I think he's going to put maximum effort in to make this work. I think this block is going to be really good overall.
Recently, he had been working with the NWA. I'm just looking that up.
Billy Corgan's promotion.
Yes, exactly.
And this is gonna be an upgrade for
surely. Yes. Yeah, so that's block A. Who do you think is advancing from that?
Oh, I think Keno. I'd be really surprised.
Keno makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, like with Kongo splitting up, I think that even before that, I thought he'd probably make the final. But the way they've set things up, he has stuff with Nakajima and Go. Like, matches that just happened. He literally just beat Go in a match a couple of days ago. Right. So I'd be very surprised if it was anyone besides him that won it.
Yep. Then block B is Goshi Ozaki, Katsuhiko Nakajima. So we're going to get another Axis match. El Iol de Dr. Wagner Jr., the national champion. Manabu Soya, Daiki Inaba, Saxon Huxley, Lance Anoa'i, and Yuma Anzai from All Japan Pro Wrestling. That was a great announcement too, because much like in Block A, we'll get fresh matches, and I'm looking forward to Yuma Anzai mixing up with the likes of Shiozaki and Nakajima and Wagner Jr.
I just want to say, I loved Anzai's title match against Nagata. I don't know if you saw that yet.
I've seen that, and I'm very positive that they will do another match of that sort once in a couple of years, so maybe next year, when Nagata doesn't have the championship anymore, and then he'll win.
Yeah, exactly. But I loved it. I thought it was like perfect for what it needed to be. Yep. It was a match where even the like stuff that went wrong was actually better. Like, it made it better for the overall story. Like, when they did the moonsault, it's like, it totally fits this guy, this rookie wrestler, who has no moves. Like, his moveset is like nothing. Practically.
Yeah. Jumping knees, German suplex, body slam. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like he had to debut a new move, but it was one that he just threw something against the wall. Like, heavily outgunned against this legendary performer. He did something. I mean, the moonsault was awful, but it made it better. Like to me. It's like you're doing something you're not comfortable with that you shouldn't be doing because you need to do it to win. And it showed that he would do whatever it takes. I love that match so much. That, to me, is like a match of the year level match, in my opinion.
Oh, wow.
I know I'm on an island with that, but I thought it was perfect for what, like, it was, like, if you just watch wrestling for moves, then that wasn't it at all. Like, it wasn't at that level. But if you look at it through a psychological lens and what it meant and how they worked it, it was so good. Like, I thought that, to me, is more entertaining than, like, a million moves match.
Absolutely, yeah. That's definitely going to be a match that we will look back at. After all, it was also his debut opponent, so these two are going to be linked in the future as well, much like I said.
And he's going to be the future of that company,
for sure.
At the end of the day, and the future of this whole, like, the whole industry in Japan. I think the world of him as a performer. Like, what a great rookie!
It's incredible, like, what he's able to do with less than 50 matches. Until that point, to his name, have to watch him. You just have to watch him, and you'll see. You can compare him to other wrestlers that have less than 50 matches. Go to your local indies and watch wrestlers that have less than 50 matches. You will see the complete contrasts to what Yuma Anzai is able to do. This guy is special. This is a special talent.
Yeah, he laps the field of every company to me of rookies. I think he is absolutely special. And this is, I'd predicted that he would be the N1, by the way, because I thought it made perfect sense for him to lose to Nagata and then go on this, not an excursion per se, but like you're wrestling all different talents.
Exactly.
You get fresh opponents. It's only going to help him grow from where he's already at.
And that's where All Japan actually is better than New Japan, because their rookies are not only wrestling themselves, they are wrestling other wrestlers with much more experience. They bring in wrestlers from different companies to wrestle their rookies. They position them further up the card much earlier than New Japan is, where the Young Lion system makes sense as well, where they wrestle each other and build these dojo feuds, but they rarely wrestle. That has been in the last couple of years. New Japan has broken that up a bit in with this new generation of rookies, but still they are mostly wrestling each other, and All Japan is approaching this differently.
Yeah, and then I think that we've seen it pay off with somebody like an Anzai. Exactly. The rest of the block, I don't like Axis facing each other, actually. This is my big thing and why I argued against, because I think everybody predicted Go would win this tournament, but I'm against that personally, because I think Axis should have a run. Don't reunite them just to have them go on singles paths again. Well, you know, and I think that's not a good thing. I think that they have much more to offer as a tag team at this moment, in my opinion. So I don't really like them in the same block. I don't need teases of them dissension or anything like that. I'm sure it'll be a great match because they're wonderful wrestlers, but I didn't like that personally. Wagner, to me, fantastic champion.
Yes.
You know, I think he's a great
Looking
performer.
Looking forward to his match with Amakusa. That's going to be such a great match.
Yeah, that to me is as anticipated as any match in this tournament.
I'm so hyped for it.
Yeah, like Amakusa, amazing worker. unfortunately got undercut by the horrendous junior booking that Noah has.
Well, you know, what you gonna do?
Yeah, it's certainly bigger. Certainly one of the worst matches, maybe in Noah history, happened on that Green Journey show with Hayata versus Dante Leon. Just an embarrassment of a performance for both men.
It hurts when you just say it. When you say Hayata and Dante Leon, it just hurts.
Oh, the crowd. Oh, my God. Just a, you want to talk about a dead crowd. I mean, for ladder spots, chairs, you know, all the garbage that GCW wrestlers are known for. And it's a shame because, actually, we had a good GCW wrestler on the last show with Ninja Mac. They actually had a pretty decent match. And then you get this with Dante Leon. So it's like, we can't escape. They had to do it. But Amakusa should be the champion if there was justice in this world. And now he gets to go against Wagner. They're going to have an amazing match. Soya, now that Kongo's done, he's broken away from the red. He's got the
here
again.
I watched his match just today against Takao Mori, his former partner. And he is back to the black hair.
Yeah, that's right. They have black tights, black hair. No more All Japan. He's now in Noah for good, I guess. Very emotional on the Kongo breakup. He was crying. It was kind of sad.
I mean, it was the entryway to Pro Wrestling Noah. He basically wasn't doing anything with Wrestle One going down. Him being brought in secured him a job.
That's true. And then now he gets the chance to make his own way in this tournament. So hopefully he can impress it. He's done a good job. If you look at his year. Did. He's had a sneaky improved year from where, you know, because he was kind of like mid-tier big guy that there's a million of in Japan, pretty much. And that this year he's actually done a lot better. I actually had some good matches. His team with Keno's really taken off. Now he's got to, because I remember when he was around, he used to be like a prospect for All Japan when he was first there 10, you know, 12 years ago. But then it never worked. Like, when the Wrestle One split happened, their big idea was, like, you're the GM now.
Like, it was so wild. Like, he quit All Japan Pro Wrestling, and he was brought in. This was, kind of was a backdoor deal for him to sneak into the company and to tell All Japan, no, he's not going to be a wrestler. He's just going to be a GM. Don't worry.
Well, everybody left for Wrestle One when he left. So, like, it was the whole company.
It was later, actually. It was later. It was not the original Wrestle One split.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So Soya coming in as a GM, but the fact is his career flatlined after that point. Like you said, wasn't doing anything. Now with Noah, he was, like I said, fine. It's not like he was ever bad, but he was more like a generic big guy that wasn't that special. And now this year he's actually improved a lot and kind of captured some of what he had before. And hopefully he can bring that here. And Inaba, I'm a big fan of his. I've always thought he was really underrated by everybody. And the tag run he had with Kitamiya showed it. I think that's another one where he really proves doubters wrong, like him and Kitamiya as the tag team. And here he'll have a chance. Huxley and Anoa'i, I really don't have any expectations for, to be honest. Just like I said, they're the two question marks of this whole tournament, in my opinion. And I think it's good they put them in the same block, although bad because it's the block that Anzai is in. Hopefully he doesn't. Those matches don't go too long, is all I can say on that end. But it's still a good block overall. You know, hopefully you could get something from Huxley and Anoa'i, and the rest are all good and interesting to watch. But I think that... I think Go is the obvious pick to win this block.
Yeah, that's a classic final as well. I think, was it still the Global League when they had the Keno versus Shiozaki final?
Yeah, maybe so. It may have been the first year of the N1, too. Wasn't that like 2020?
May have been. Let's see. I'm going to look that up. But definitely Shiozaki makes sense with his return. Keno would win then, right?
I think you could go either way, but I do think Keno, like right now, I think Keno would win. I think most people predicted Go would win, but I think Keno is the better person for the exact reason I said, that I think Axis should be a tag run.
Yeah, but actually, didn't Keno win the tournament?
Yeah, because Go never won the tournament.
Exactly. Then it was Global League. Oh, it was way back, actually. 2017.
How about that?
Global League. Yeah.
Yeah, how about that Global League winner, Keno? But that's a big story for Go, and I think that's why a lot of people thought he was going to win going into it, because like Go's never won the tournament. That's kind of like his one mountain he doesn't have to climb, or he's yet to climb. But with Congo breaking up, I think it makes more sense for Keno to win.
Yeah, true, because he specifically mentioned that. I just looked it up on the Congo Wikipedia page. Keno, on his anniversary show, said, if you want stability, there is no evolution.
Yeah.
So that's why he broke up Congo. And
Broke up himself.
Yes, he's broken now. Broken Keno. Yeah. And would definitely play into him winning this tournament. What about Wagner Jr.?
He was my dark horse pick.
He absolutely is a dark horse.
Yeah, because you have a story with him. I think there's three guys in this block that you have a story with that if they won, I can't write out. He's one of them because first ever Mexican champion, GHC heavyweight champion. There's never been a Mexican version. There's been Mexican junior champion, Mexican national champion, but not the heavyweight champion. And he's never got a shot at that title. Obviously, he's been a fabulous champion as the national champion, done better than anybody could have expected. And been a guy that's really gotten over. You have the lineage. You could have his dad there, like at the finals. You know, and his dad was a great wrestler in Japan back in the day. He is a guy that you could get a great match with him and Jake out of, too. And title versus title. Like, right away, you could pull something out there as well. So he has a lot of different reasons that he could be a guy. And I would love to see that. It's not something I think will happen, but it wouldn't shock me. If it happened, like, you know, it would be completely insane that I think, like, oh, that could never happen. I think it would be a big surprise, but I would definitely see that it's a possibility, at least.
Keno versus Wagner Jr. would be a great final.
That would be awesome. Like, I would love to see that match. My third thing for a winner, because I think, you know, to me, Keno and Go are the two most likely people to win the tournament. I think everyone else is a step below. I think Wagner is a dark horse pick. But also something that a theory that I could float about here. Nakajima. If the end goal for Budokan is him versus Kento in a rematch, that would make perfect sense considering Kento came in and immediately sold out Corcoran Hall to where they had to put more seats in there for their match. And Nakajima has never been a draw on his own. So Kento actually added so much. And if the end game is for Kento to get a big moment, I'd be a Noah guy next year, like on more regularly. Not that they'll sign him or anything, but just that he'll be there a lot. Maybe even win the title. If that is the end game, I could totally see Nakajima winning to set up that match, like him versus Kento.
Sure. Oh yeah, that's that is also going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you paying attention to what I'm saying?
Yes, I literally just talked about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking about how the match will unfold and what's going to happen in that match.
No, it should be a good match, but I think it's more interesting that it sold out so fast because Noah has struggled so much in Korakuen, and that match immediately did. It sold out, and they had to add more seats to it. I thought it was an amazing sell, which, I mean, you would expect with Kento coming in.
Yeah, he was one of the stars of All Together, much like you pointed out.
Yeah, he's one of the stars of everything he's involved in, pretty much, you know, on there. So it's no surprise that he did such a great job. But I think they need stars. That's my one issue with this tournament. This tournament does not have a lot of star power in it of people who have track records of drawing big numbers at the end of the day. You've got Go with his last title reign worked, and that's about it. Like, of people that have done great things. And Keno as well, like, not completely taken out. But there's just not a lot of star power in this tournament, drawing power, so to speak. And there's going to be a point in this tournament where they do three straight nights at Corcoran Hall. And that's going to be really interesting to see how that goes. And they need stars. Kento is a star. Right. And if it takes the title to bring him in for a few months, I think you take that chance.
Yeah.
And, you know, to do that, you would have to get to Nakajima and Kento at the, you know, it, I guess we'll see what happens at the match itself with Kento and Nakajima on the 15th, if that leads to anything. But those are the guys I think have a chance, would be Keno, Go, and Nakajima, and Wagner would be my dark horse.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so much for Pro Wrestling Noah for now. Turning over to Stardom, before we talk about the big main event match here, the cage match between Queen's Quest and Wado Tidalon, they also announced their tournament blocks for the 5-star Grand Prix that is starting on July 23rd and ending on September 30 in Yokohama Budokan. We got the Red Stars, Tam Nakano, Mayu Iwatani, Saya Kamitani, Shuri, Suzu Suzuki, Starlight Kid, Natsupoi, Hazuki, Natsuko, Tora, and Ami Surei. And Blue Stars, Julia, Utami Hayashishita, Maika Saori Ano, Momo Watanabe, Mirai, Asumi, Mina Shirakawa, Mariah May, and Hanan. What do we expect from this tournament?
This tournament is going to be really good. You know, there's a lot of great talent in here. I haven't been in love with this company, to be honest with you, for the last little while, but I think that this is where they're going to be able to shine because the roster is so strong. Much like Noah, like, there's a lot of teams you can complain about. I mean, that's the first company you don't watch at the end of the day is Noah. Like, you mentioned all these companies trying to catch up. You didn't catch up on Noah.
Nope.
At the end of the day. but the tournament is going to be interesting because the wrestlers are so good. And the thing with Stardom is the talent level is so high that it's all going to work out and be great. When you look at the way the block's set up, I think there's multiple people that – like, Red Stars has more people that are viable winners, but Blue Stars has the ultimate favorite in there as well. So I think the way things went after the cage match, it's going to be interesting because a lot of people had pegged Kamitani versus Utami as a final, but they basically reunited, spoiler alert, in the cage match. So I don't know if that'll happen. From the start of the year, I said Saya would win, and I thought that would be the main event of their year-end show.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think that's totally possible, to be honest with you. I think Utami has an elevated chance as well if Saya doesn't make it.
Yeah, she hadn't been in the focus for quite some time right now.
Yeah, she's basically been undercarder for a long time. I think Saya has... I would pick Saya. I think that Bayu is definitely a chance as well. I mentioned that before. Mm-hmm. I think that you could definitely... You cannot count her out. Suzu and Natsupoi also have a chance, in my opinion, as more dark horse type of picks. Suzu coming into Stardom full-time, that's going to give them the opportunity to push her even higher. They're doing a new faction with her and Maika together. And Maika is another dark horse in Blue Stars as well. I think that could be something. You have the momentum of Himeka retiring. New faction, new look. She looks amazing with the red hair. You know, if they wanted to go with Maika, now is the best chance that they could have of that. So
finally, they got to do something with her. Like, she's ready to go. She's ready to be on top of this promotion and just let her do it.
Yeah, I don't know about on top of the promotion, but she is really good.
She has all the tools to do it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have all the tools in this tournament, you know, at the end of the day. So it's like, that's the problem with Stardom. It's like, there's 20 people that could could conceivably do it. Maybe not 20, but 15, I would say. I think Ano is another dark horse as well. When I was doing research for my half-year awards, I'll say this. Ano is somebody that rated higher than you would expect in my ratings. Like, so if you look at her work on Ice Ribbon, the stuff she did in the trios division for Stardom, she has had a great year and is a super talent, amazing look. They did the split with her and Natsupoi, even though I hated them losing the title because I thought Restart had so much more potential that they got to show. But I think Ano is another one you look at in Blue Stars. And the way it looks, if you go to the final night, it kind of tells the story of where everybody is, right? You look at the final matches in Red Stars. It's Mayu and Starlight, which is like a tradition of the tournament. Like, they always face on the last night. Starlight's never beaten Mayu in a singles match. It's very possible Starlight beats her to eliminate her, but I personally think it would be better if they hold that off for like its own, like a big show, you know, like a year-end deal. For Starlight to finally beat Mayu, because that's like, that win means more than a title for Starlight. You've got Saya and Suzu, which is what I think the block is going to come down to for Red Stars. Tom and Natsupoi, like, partners facing. I see Natsupoi being alive on the last day as well. And in the matches that don't matter, Shuri versus Ami Sarai and Hazuki and Natsukotora, like, none of those people are going to win.
No.
Even though Shuri is a fantastic performer, her time on top is basically done, and they're going to elevate, because Sarai is in her own stable, God's Eye, and that could be a match I could see Sarai winning. Or they, like, the way they tell the stories, I think Shuri will win. That's going to be her mountain to climb, pretty much. Similar to Mayu and Starlight. Hazuki and Tora, that doesn't matter at all. At the end of the day. Blue Stars. Julia and Utami is the main match on the last show. And that is what I think the tournament's going to come down to. But we know that Julia is probably not going to win because she has designs on the IWGP women's title.
I was just going to ask if the title is still around. Apparently it is.
It was on last night's show.
Yeah, I've not watched the show yet, so.
You didn't see Forbidden Door? We just talked about it.
The IWGP women's title?
Oh, no, that's right. That's the strong title.
Yeah, that's the other title. They have too many belts right now. No, Julia challenged Willow Nightingale for the strong women's title, but that's a different belt.
Yeah, that's right. That's a totally different belt. You're totally right on that. I feel like they teased something with her and Mayu, too, though. At some point, but whatever.
Paying attention, but I've not really. I mean, Mayu won the title and she hadn't defended it yet.
She did change her header on Twitter to her kissing the title, though.
Okay.
On there, so she loves it.
Does it count as a title defense?
No, but she respects the title at least. Yeah, more respect than you have for the title.
Apparently, yes.
Yeah. And apparently I have too. I didn't even know it was different than the strong title, apparently.
How about that?
Yeah, see, so who knows what's going on with all these weird titles. But regardless, Julia's not going to win the tournament. I think Utami, the best we can hope for her is that she eliminates Utami. Maybe Julia can make the final and lose. She should be the champion, in my opinion, but regardless... I think Utami is the favorite in Blue Stars. Micah and Mirai is the other match you could look at. Mirai will very likely be the white belt champion. She's going to face Tom in a few days for the white belt. I think she'll win. You know, I can't see Tom double champ lasting forever. But who knows? Like, what's going to happen? We can't say for sure. I think Micah versus Mirai is another match that you could see somebody making it through. And then the rest... It's tough. Mina and Sariano is another match. Mina has been pushed relatively strongly all year. I think she could get another good run here. And Ano, I expect big things for in Stardom. So I would like to see that. The other ones, Azumi and Momo, that's a long-time rivalry, but probably won't mean that much. And Hanan versus Mariah May, you know that's not going to be anything worthwhile. But that's going to be a good match, though, much better than the Tora match in Red Block. Mariah May has done much better than I think anybody could have predicted when she came in. And Hanan is like they're, you know, similar to Azumi when she was younger, like the teenage prodigy kind of. So she's going to do some big things. And the tournament's going to be good. I think that it'll be Utami and Saya. Like, so I still think they could go there. But I do think it's possible Micah makes it through instead. And Saya can... I think Saya is going to win, ultimately, and that'll be the big match at the end of the year. But it could be Utami. It could be all those names that I said overall. But it'll be a good tournament.
So about the show, Dylan, this is a rating of 7.95. We got a couple of matches that were rated here. The six-man tag in the mid-card, for example, Cosmic Angels against Micah. Meisera and Suzuki at 7.17. The Goddesses of Stardom title 6.49 with Club Venus, Mariah May, you had just mentioned her, and Mina Shirakawa defeating God's Eye, Ami Sarai, and Mirai to win the championship. 7.98 for the Artist of Stardom steel cage match. There are two steel cage matches on the card. Julia Mai Sakurai and Tekla defended their belts against Stars, Hazuki, Koguma, and Mayu Iwatani. But the match that was the main focus was the Loser Must Leave match with Queen's Quest against Oedo Tai 12 women tag match. And this one, you said it off the air. I'm going to watch the show. I am not as invested with Stardom as others are because I don't follow them regularly. I pick and choose and watch some shows, but I'm not really too close of a follower or a fan of the company.
Yeah.
I'm not too close of a fan of either groups that were in this unit steel cage match. So really looking forward to the match itself, but you are especially looking forward to what I say about the match.
Yes.
It has a rating of 9.45 based on 73 votes right now. What's your opinion on the match?
For the show itself, I want to say that I really liked Shuri versus Zena. That was by far Zena's best match in Stardom. Probably the match for the undercard that stood out the most to me. The six woman tag with Cosmic Angels and Kairi was very good too, but it wasn't as great as I was hoping for. Because the restart matches were super awesome, and I don't think this one matched those. But I think Zena versus Shuri snuck up on me. And Shuri's a great worker, so it's no surprise. But the two matches you need to see from the show are the cage matches. Like, those are the best matches by far. The artist match was very good, well worth watching. Donna Del Mondo are great champions, and Stars always does good stuff in these crazy styles of matches, pretty much, and all three of them did good. Mayu is very funny in the comedy role as well, so you got a lot of cool stuff there. The main event, the 12-woman tag, Queen's Quest and Awedo Tai, the reason why I wanted to see your opinion on it is because I knew what you said is the exact reason why, because if you follow the company and follow the storyline, it's this insanely emotional match. Like, they hit all of the story beats of this because they had been telling a story. To sum it up short, long story short, basically, Saya Kamitani and Utami Aphrodite, as the name of their team, they've been on the outs for the last couple of months. They've been teasing a breakup. A lot of people thought that one of them would leave, the group, and get kicked out in this match. And it all built up to an emotional spot where Utami, red equals green, the blade has come out. We've seen Stardom bring the blood in multiple times the last couple of shows. We had it with Tom versus Julia in the press conference. And now in the actual match, Utami bleeds, and that adds more drama and emotion to it. And they basically do a thing where everybody's on the outside. Like, the people who have escaped from Queen's Quest are cheering on Utami and Saya to escape the cage, and the Awedo Tai people are trying to interfere and keep Utami out. So basically, Saya's got this baseball bat, and they basically did it to where she could smack the crap out of Utami and turn on her and then leave and, kick out Utami. But instead, she attacked the Awedo Tai people interfering. They took a huge bump outside the ring. I can't remember who it was from Awedo Tai, but they fell off the cage, and Saya ended up reaching her hand over, and Utami grabbed it, and they clasped their hands together, and that's how they won. And it was nice. Like this mega emotional match. They hugged at the end. The crowd cheered. The Queen's Quest was cheering and going crazy. It was amazing. A super emotional moment. And then that was followed by Awedo Tai entering the ring, and every member of the group stomping Saki Kashima and kicking her out of the thing. Except for Rina. Rina didn't join in, unfortunately. She had sympathy for her, but they got rid of her. And then Queen's Quest ran back in for the save and stood tall, pretty much. And it was this amazing emotional spectacle of a match. As a wrestling match, obviously, there was tons of fun stuff here. If you're a fan of, the old Dragon Gate Dead or Alive matches, it was kind of like that, but not as crazy or comedy based. It was like a serious version of those kind of matches in a lot of ways. And they ended up doing a great thing with Tall Saya and Utami. Great moment, and Queen's Quest stands tall again. Everything's fixed from the last few months of their feuding, and they're back on the same page. And it was awesome. I don't know if I'd rate it 9.5 or whatever out of 10. It's not like that level, because I think to a lot of people, this could be a match of the year level match. I think it's still a great match. Don't get me wrong. It's just a level below that for me, but I still really liked it. And I as a follower of the promotion and a fan of Utami, especially more than it, and Saya, I'm not a big fan of Saya. Actually, I know that a lot of people are. I'm just not. But I think that they told this story so well that it really worked. I'd be interested to see how you take it as somebody who's not emotionally invested. And yeah. So that's why I pointed it out, because I feel like this match hinges on your emotional investment overall. If you're a fan of both of them, I think that's why you're seeing these high ratings overall. But it was a great spectacle. Very well done. Oh, another thing I wanted to point out. great when they did the thing where she hit her with the baseball bat. When Kamatani hit her with the baseball bat, the camera work was so good. Like the way they did that, like totally pro shot where they showed her falling off camera, off the side of the cage, into everybody. It was like great camera work, great crowd, great work, great setup, storytelling. Every bit of it all came together. It was so nice. Pro that done. It was one of the better pieces of business they've done in a long time.
I'm looking forward to it. Probably going to push it up to my viewing schedule. Still have the remainder of today's All Japan show left, but then I guess I'll fire up the Stardom show.
Cool.
Yeah, good. Very comprehensive review, Dylan, for that. Thank you for your insight on Stardom. Always appreciated by me because, much like I said, I'm not the regular viewer, but through your eyes, I'm always up to date with Stardom. So that's,
hopefully I didn't bore you too much.
No. It's great to have this insight. It's good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, final topic for our show today, because the time is running out for me a bit here, is Dragon Gate. We've been DMing, Dylan, you and I, about DDT and Dragon Gate and our opinion of either company in a recent week. And I've also been listening to the Open the Voice Gate guys. Jay was on one of their recent shows a couple of weeks ago where he was rather negative on the run of shows that they have had recently. And Case also was very down on specifically their recent triple shot in Hokkaido at the end of May. I've watched the shows from Fukuoka, I think it was, in June. At least they fired up some developments there in regards to Kobe World that is actually this coming weekend.
Yes.
On July 2nd. And the July 1st show, by the way, from the Kobe Arts Theater will be live for free on the Dragon Gate Network. So that's your hype train going into this show for free on DG Network. And if you want to watch the big show from Kobe World, you have to pay for the DG Network for July. They fire up some storylines that we'll discuss here a bit with this card that has 9 matches. And the most striking part of it all is, of course, that the match between stablemates, between Madoka Kikuta as the champion and his challenger Yuki Yoshioka, is not the main event of the show, but the semi-main. The main event is the big, you mentioned it, Dragon Gate had these crazy matches in recent years. This one is probably also going to be crazy, but more serious, because it's a Mascara contra Mascara match with Ultimo Dragon, Dragon Kid, Strong Machine J, Shun Skywalker, and Diamante, with the loser having to give up his mask. And that is the match that they've been building for some time now. It started all out with Diamante always challenging Ultimo Dragon to a mask versus mask match. And it led to Ryo Saito throwing Ultimo Dragon not only out of the building, not only out of the company, but in storyline, he even had to leave the country because he wouldn't agree to do a mask versus mask match with Diamante. And this all got entwined with the storyline that Shun Skywalker and Strong Machine J have. They hate each other's guts. Dragon Kid came to the aid of his trainer, Ultimate Dragon, and is also involved in this one. And all these 5 guys now have storylines with one another, which then leads up to this 5-way match in the main event of Kobe World. And I do have my theory of what could happen. The most What most people look at is Diamante losing his mask. But what's your take on this match?
I think Shun will lose, personally.
Shun?
Yeah. Mm. I don't think Diamante is going to lose.
Diamante's mask, that's also something that the Open the Voice Gate guys pointed out. Diamante's mask doesn't really mean a lot.
Yeah, like that's a problem with this. Like, remember, we're ending the show with this. At the end of the day, like, the biggest show of the year is ending with this. And I think there's much more storyline opportunity, because if Diamante loses the mask, he's still Diamante. With Shun losing the mask, his character benefits from losing, because he could go even more crazy.
Yeah.
Which is kind of his deal. There's one match on the show that's been built up to any noteworthy extent, and it's this one. Like, the other ones are all, I don't want to say worthless, but they're not.
No, that's what I was saying. Like, they've done some minor stories on the road to this in recent weeks, but mostly those are matches that came together because, we are Unit Gold Class and we want to fight Unit M3K, and that's then the match. Pretty much the same goes for the weird Triangle Gate match, because Naroki Doi all of a sudden is back with the Gold Class, which is weird.
Against his will. Ryo Saito put that in there.
Ryo Saito is such a tyrannic guy on top of this company. He also forced all these guys to be in this mask versus mask match.
Yeah, well, except for Dragon Kid, he begged to be in there. He
volunteered to be in.
Yes.
That's where it's not a likely scenario, but hear me out here.
Yeah.
So Dragon Kid came to the aid of his mentor, of his trainer, Ultimo Dragon. And Ultimo Dragon really doesn't like Dragon Kid to begin with.
Yeah.
So a scenario that I could see being something unexpected, something from left field for a lot of people, but I've been thinking about it. What if, much like the Stardom match, there is a scenario in which, like, a weapon is handed into the ring, and Ultimo Dragon turns on Dragon Kid.
Oh my god.
Ultimo Dragon saves his mask, and Dragon Kid is losing his mask, and Ultimo Dragon turns to Zebratz.
That's how Zebratz started, with Shun. I think a lot of people think that's going to happen with Shun and Diamante, that Shun will sacrifice Diamante much like he did Dragon Daya in their match. So now you're saying that Ultimo will be the one. Will he adopt a Shun-like persona where he's like insane?
He's definitely going back to his mask. He had this, what was his gimmick? Was it Tiger Dragon?
Yeah, when he came back as a tiger, that's right.
Right, he had this dark masks that he had with the teeth attached to it. So that could be a deal. And Ultimo Dragon is fine for what he is right now, but him turning heel would be a nice new way to approach his character in Dragon Gate.
The return of Tiger Dragon, you want to see here.
Yeah, maybe.
I think Dragon Kid losing his mask is definitely possible, only because him being in the match makes really no sense, otherwise. So let's just say they did this match. All of this seems so thrown together. It's been such a poor build to the show in general. But so they took their two main storylines and kind of combined them for this cage. Who maybe, and this is just like a conspiracy, if that happens, this is what I would think would lead to that. Nobody wanted to lose their mask, so they needed somebody to take the fall and get a payday, and Dragon Kid was the one that was like, hey, I'm not getting into a main event spot in Jacobi World unless this happens. Because he might not have even been on the show if he wasn't in this match at the end of the day. So that could be something that could happen.
And there's another argument to that. Because with Dragon Kid losing his mask, him and Dragon Daya teaming would make even more sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I could see that. Like, I honestly don't think that's impossible at all. Like, I think that Ultimo, there's no way that he's going to lose his mask.
And it doesn't. It doesn't mean anything either, because everybody knows who is under the mask.
Yeah, that's true. Everyone knows it's Asai. Yeah. So, but yeah, there's no way he's going to lose the mask in a 5-way cage match. Jay, he could lose it.
Yeah, he could. He wouldn't be his character anymore.
No, and that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, if he, the person under the mask, says, okay, I need to forge my own way and not be like Dad, like, this could be a way to get to that point. Like, now a totally new character, his real name, like, whatever. If they could do that, I think that's like the fourth most likely person, though, is Jay. I think then you've got Dragon Kid we just talked about him. Like, there's definitely reason for him being in the match that raises your eyebrow to think, hey, like maybe they could put him in, and maybe, like you said, him and Dia teaming could be a long-term plan. I think it's great. I love Dragon Kid personally. I think he's a great worker, and I think it would be great if he could do something with it, you know, get more of a push going forward. And Shun and Diamante, they're both heel characters right now. If Diamante loses the mask, that'll probably lead to him becoming more of a babyface type of guy. Like, he'll lead, you know, because you would think Shun would turn on him, and that would lead to a babyface turn. And if Shun loses, like I said, he gets to be maniacal, and which could be a lot of fun. And, I mean, they've already ran through the title. Like, he's already won the title. So it's like, there's not much more upward. Like, he can't go that much further than he's already gone, you know, without a change of some sort. So I think that that is very possible. But if I had to pick, I think that they're going to end it with Shun and make it a big deal. But I think Diamante and Dragon Kid are both possibilities. The other two, I don't think it's impossible Jay doesn't lose, but I think it's very unlikely. And Dragon's not losing. Like, Ultimo is not going to lose. So it's fine.
Yes, so that's the cage match. The Omen the Dreamgate title match. Madoka Gikuta, champion against Yuki Yoshioka. You basically said it. Yoshioka is going to be in the N1 climax, and he's not going to be in as the champion of the Dragon Gate. So that's a very clear outcome. But do you think that this could lead up to a split for D-Courage?
Like I said, if it was before they announced for the tournament, I definitely could. Like, I thought that was a very strong possibility, because how they built up this Kobe world is really bad, like, for this title match. It was like, you had, in years past, you could have had maybe the King of Gate winner, like last year with Yoshioka.
Yep, they pushed that back, the tournament.
Yeah.
There was really nothing between early May and late June. There was nothing that really was a build to this big show.
Absolutely not. And this is my theory on why it happened this way. I actually feel even stronger about it now that he's in the N1. Because, like I said, this match is basically a punt for Kakuta's first defense. It's like, we don't have anything for you.
No.
So we're gonna put the best match we can, which is against Yoshioka. Even if he's your teammate, just have a great match, and we'll move on to something after the show that's actually important. Is basically how I read this match. My theory on why it happened this way and why they moved the King of Gate back. I think you could have built this. If they had the King of Gate and Yoshioka won back-to-back, this would be a much more interesting match than it is now. I think the reason why it happened how it did is I think they wanted Shingo to be in this match versus Kakuta, and it fell apart at the end. Like, they wouldn't agree to have him lose. So they pulled this match out of their ass, which Shingo's going to be there anyway.
I think that's very likely.
Yeah, and like, they just pulled this out of their ass because they didn't get what they thought they could get at the end of the day. And they did get a makeup with Hiromu getting in there, which is cool and all. But I think that this match, I really don't have any interest in this match.
No, me neither. You're talking about the Yamato versus Hiromu Takahashi match, of course.
And the title match. I don't think that the title match is interesting at all. Like, Yoshioka's going to lose.
From that standpoint, the title match is not interesting. The interesting part is what happens after that.
Yeah, and then, like I said, and then what happens after is he goes to Noah for 2 months. So like, any future things will have to wait until after the N1, pretty much, for them to do anything. And the Yamato match, you know, his thing Yamato. He's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with him. It's just, I'm not interested in him. Like, there's so many other people.
That's why I really was so sure that Hiromu would lose the junior title, because now that's so weird that he's still the junior champion of New Japan and going into the singles match against Yamato.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter. He's going to win. So
sure. Exactly.
Yeah, with or without the title, he's going to win. So it doesn't even matter, really. But you know, Wato, they had a chance to do something with him. It didn't really happen.
Oh, by the way, I need to invoke my clause to change a player in our fantasy booking villain. I'm going to put Wato out, and I'm taking Atsuki Aoyagi.
Okay. Yeah, like I said, let me note that down. I can't wait to get rid of Wato.
I was so sure, man.
Yeah, I mean, Hiromu, man, as junior champion, it's very interesting how they use him. Not in the G1, but instead at Kobe World.
He's going to do nothing for the next 2 months now.
He's going to wrestle Yamato. I mean, that's something.
That's, yeah.
That's not great, but it's but, something. But
not in New Japan.
No, in New Japan, he's on the bench. Like, it's G1 time, all the juniors are toast. And that is the way of New Japan and their juniors. But Yamato and Hiromu will be a good match. And they did set it up with the junior festival earlier this year in March.
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, like, we're going back 6 months to draw on something. But that's more than everything else on the show, practically, except yeah, for the cage, so.
That's true. Yeah, let's go through the matches that we have on this card. It's 9 matches, much like I said, and there will be 2 matches before the actual show, so in the pre-show. We will have Mochizuki Jr. into the newest rookie, Ryoya Tanaka, against Kai and Hio. Poor Kai, not even on the main card.
Second, last year and now in the pre-show.
Yeah. Second match in the pre-show, Satyoko Boy, Noriyuki Yoshida, and Mondai Ryu against Geki Horiguchi, Punch Tominaga, and Hohulun. And for the main card, opening up is Dragon Daya, Laestrea, and Eita against Kagetora, Yuti, and Taro Nohashi from Ichidoku Pro. Then we get the Brave Gate title match if Ishin makes weight. And they are doing this storyline too often with Brave Gate. Gotta say, with the challenger having to make weight.
Well, they didn't do it forever, but they literally just did it 2 months ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So Jason Lee defends against Ishin if he makes weight. Then we have...
I suspect he will, for the rest
of
the
record. Yeah, I suspect he will. Then we have a cool tag match with Masaki Mochizuki and Kenno against Don Fuji and Shuji Kondo. But that could change. No, it's actually it's set up as that match, but they still
know. It was originally Kenno and Kondo, but since they broke up Kongo, they switched them around. But yeah, that's probably one of the yeah.
Yeah. Resurrection Runaway 10 games, second round. Kono Mama Ichikawa versus X. Who is X going to be?
Shingo.
Oh. Sure. Makes sense.
Yeah, he's gonna be there anyway. why
he's
not? He'll
be there anyway, yeah. I got one name. I was thinking Ichikawa has now wrestled against so many of the legends, but I don't think that he has ever wrestled Atsushi Onita.
Oh, that could be interesting. Like I said, that could be the least impactful Ishikawa match we can see.
But Shiga Sakagi, of course, makes sense. Yeah.
Onita's had some terrible performances lately in all Japan.
Oh, yeah.
What about Yoshitatsu?
Oh, Yoshitatsu. He performed so
DDT
well.
DDT brought him in?
Yeah, he performed so well on All Together.
And DDT's bringing him in? WWE superstar Yoshitatsu?
World famous.
Yeah, world famous. Bring him over.
Yeah,
it's Ishikawa. It'll be fine. Like no matter who it is, it'll be the same.
Open the Twin Gate title, Susumu Mochizuki and Yasushi Kanda against the challengers Benkei and BB Hulk. That should be really good because Susumu and Kanda are on such a tear as a tag team. Great, great tag matches. The match in which they won the Twin Gate against Kenno and Kondo was so outstanding. The Rey de Pareja's final was so outstanding. Kanda is incredible this year. Great year for both guys.
Yeah, I mean, 2 good matches in 1 year, that's probably his record for his career. So, yeah, you know... Yeah, the match should be good. BB Hulk has looked better, too, since joining Gold Class. He's actually shown a little bit more. Obviously, very broken down to where he was, but still a fine second guy in the tag. My issue with all of this is, because I was told repeatedly by people, in my opinion, I wanted the Mochizukis to challenge, because they had the storyline that they'd built up. They'd actually built something up, unlike this match, which has
They did build to the M3K split, but then Junior got hurt, and that put everything on the back burner.
And that's even more reason to actually have the tag match, in my opinion, because you could drag it out even further with him and Dad.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, it's like, I got told so many times, Mochizuki Jr., he's not on the card because he's injured. I was like, wait a minute, he's coming back in a week. I'm sure he can make it if they really wanted to. And now it's announced he's on the show, just on the pre-show. So there's no reason to throw away. This is Kobe World. This is your biggest show of the year. Do they not know that? Like, you know, it doesn't seem like
I don't know if they know that. to be quite honest, because the build has been pretty lackluster. And there would be an argument, Dylan. There would be the argument that the M3K versus M3K match wouldn't have had any build, but this didn't have any build either.
Yeah, that's the problem. Like, it would have had way more build than this, which is nothing at the end of the day. And I'm all about Ben K. Like, he's one of my favorite guys in the company wrestler. Yeah, Cheeky Cheeky. Just as a wrestler, performer, character, all that stuff. I love him. I've always loved him. I don't know why they waited so long to do anything with him. But there's nothing on this card that's grabbing me from an emotional aspect.
Yeah, true. And the same goes, like, for the next match. You said it, Yamato versus Hiromu Takahashi. It should be a good match, but really no feel to it.
Hiromu coming is at least a legit surprise. I don't think anybody thought that.
Open the Triangle Gate title champions, Natural Vibes, KZ, Big Boss Shimizu, and Jackie Funky Kamai. Defend against the aforementioned Gold Class team, Kota Minura, Minorita, and Noroki Doi. Kamai recently has been the lost point of all the matches that he was in. So I can see the weird Gold Class team winning the title with Kamai being pinned.
Yeah, recently. It's been that way all year.
True.
I have him on my team. I know. I count all those losses that he takes.
Yes.
I love him, though, as a wrestler. I think he's actually one of the best. I wish he was doing something better than this, but it's fine.
Yeah, and then, of course, the two main matches that we already talked about. I mean, the card itself, I like the card. There should be amount of good matches on this one. Yuki Yoshioka and Madoka Kikuta really has the ability to be a great, great title match. The main event has the potential to create a lot of drama.
Yeah.
But the build itself has been not that great, and I'm not hyped for the show going in, to be quite honest, because of the build. But once I'll get to watch the show, I guess the hype will come automatically.
People said that last year too about Kobe World, and I'll say this year is much like last year was like a train wreck. Everything went wrong. Everything was going good until they put Minora in the main event, and then it just everything just went insane. And the crowd was dead. It was a terrible show, like outside of one match. This year's better than that, even just not having any build. Like I said, there's nothing they can do that would be worse than Minora in the main event, like they did last year. But there's just not a lot inspiring me when we go over this card. I mean, even the matches, it's like, of everybody, Ishin is the Brave Gate challenger against Jason Lee.
Yeah,
it's like you couldn't have found somebody better than that.
Ishin hasn't been good in his comeback. Yeah, he totally reminds me of Masayuki Kono, of the way he moves around. And yes, exactly. That is not a good comparison. But look at the guy. He has put on so much weight, but his body doesn't really come together with the weight he put on.
It's sad because he had so much potential with him and Mochizuki Jr. feuding. It's too bad it turned out that Mochizuki Jr. was the one causing all that. Mochizuki Jr. still has a lot of potential even without Ishin. Without Mochizuki Jr., Ishin, I'm totally with you. He's not the guy. It's like, that's not a Kobe World. Like, that's not... Jason deserves better as the champion because he could have had a great match with all sorts of people like on the roster. That's... What about Mochizuki Jr.? That's on the undercard. He should be on the show. Like, this is another thing that irritates me so much about the show. Why is he on the pre-show and not the main show? The Hiromu and Yamato match is going to be good. Like you said, the three main matches... They're going to carry the show. I think there's more upside to them than last year's show. Even though, I mean, the tag match was fantastic last year. The Shun and Diamante versus Jason.
The end, Yoshioka was standing there as the champion, which was the right decision, of course. But yes, overall, the weekend wasn't well received.
Yeah, Yoshioka and Kai was a good match, like a worthy main event. There's the one with Nora didn't hit as much, but... You know, what can you do at the end of the day? But the last two matches in last year's show hit good. It's just the crowd was so dead. It was just kind of a sad thing because you think of Kobe World, it just seems like the company's changed so much over the years. Because I remember us talking earlier, you were mentioning like the cage match, but the truth is they haven't done those in like 5 years. Like the big dead or alive cage match. And it's a shame because I think they've lost some of themselves recently. Hopefully they can do something good because the roster... Kind of the theme of the show, apparently, talking about some of these shows. The roster is so good that they can make stuff work. But their problem isn't even they do bad stuff like some of these other companies. They just got lazy, it feels like. They didn't do anything for the show outside of the cage match at the end of the day. And I wish that they, if they had just put a bit more effort into it, I think people like me, people like Jay Church, Case and Mike on Open Voice Gate, I think that we would all be a little bit more positive if they just tried, because they've shown, actually, that they can do great things when they actually put effort into it. And I think that's what's been missing in this COVID world buildup.
Yep, absolutely to the point, Dylan. I couldn't agree more and add anything else to that. Let's just hope for a good show. That's, I guess.
It is possible that it is. It's very possible that it is. I'll watch it.
Me too. Yeah. Probably not live, because next weekend there's Schützenfest in my hometown, so I'll be out.
Hometown Schützenfest, baby.
Yes. Finally again. 2 years in a row, it didn't happen because of COVID regulations. And then last year, I had COVID myself. And now, finally, it's back for me. So I'm gonna have to catch up with the show. Probably that's on Sunday, right? Yeah, I can't watch it on Sunday and Monday, so I'll have to watch it early next, in the middle of next week. So yeah, we'll be fine. Yes, but so far with the topics that we had, Dylan, the next show that we are having is the year, half year awards, not the year end awards. It's only June.
The end of the year. Yes.
No, it's the half year awards. It's always one of my favorite shows of the year, and we will be opening up the votings for that once again through our Google form. We'll be posting that on our Twitter, Eastern Lariat. So check that out with the updates there. Check out the votings for our award names. Also, Dylan, check out our Patreon.
Yes, check out all that stuff. Patreon.com/EasternLariat. You get all kinds of cool stuff on there. Like I said, me and Dean, we did a show about the NOAH show. Went a bit in-depth on Kento and Katsuhiko Nakajima. All kinds of stuff there. I did a show about the All Japan show earlier this month, too, the one with Anzai and Nagata. Like I said, I raved about the main event. And also the two tag matches on the semi-mains were very good, too. Strong BJ. Oh, that's something we need to talk about real quick. Okabayashi.
Exactly, like, yes, right.
Take it away. Like I said, we can't go without mentioning this on Okabayashi. What do you think? Like I said, is this going to be a permanent hiatus or just a hiatus?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I just want to say that the match that was on the All Japan show that you mentioned, Strong BJ against Suwama and Ishikawa, what an absolute banger of a match. That immediately was one of the best tag matches of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. But Okabayashi, yeah. You know, I think that him leaving would be such a big blow to Big Japan.
Oh, yeah. They don't have anybody right now that can fill the void.
Yeah, it would be a void in my heart.
It's crazy, man. This guy has been such a staple of Japanese pro wrestling within the last 10 years. He debuted, of course, in 2008, then rose to prominence with being the tag team partner of Daisuke Sekimoto, surpassing Sekimoto as the top guy in the promotion. Also one of the top guys whenever Big Japan guys appear in other promotions. We've raved about his Champion Carnival run in 2019, the matches that he had there, especially with Zeus, for example. Oh, I miss Zeus too, by the way. Man.
I just said that not like a couple of weeks ago. I posted on Twitter. I was like, man, I miss Zeus in All Japan.
Yeah, me too. We were so optimistic that he would just continue wrestle with All Japan when he bought Osaka Pro, but that's not happening.
You never know what's going through these guys' personal lives and things like that. You know, maybe he just wanted to hang out in Osaka.
And his office job is probably pretty demanding, too. But yeah, Okabayashi. I am really unsure right now what I can make of this. Because we've seen other hiatuses that just continue. For example, with Tsukasa Fujimoto. So, if he wants to...
Well, she got pregnant. He won't have to worry about that.
No, yeah, that's right. Okabayashi probably doesn't have that going for him. if he wants to reevaluate where he stands in life, being 40 probably is a good point. But I question. I don't know the guy, but he has been wrestling for half his life, basically. And the question is he able to get away from it? I don't think so.
Yeah, that's exactly my same thought. Yeah, like there's no real retirement in wrestling. It's kind of my vision of it. I think he'll come back. You know, I think he's going to be gone for a while, though, because even his comments were basically like, I need to reevaluate myself.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that at all. They had a little bit of a moment after that match, too, that was basically like, thank you for all of your great work, not just in Big Japan, but also All Japan over the years. And, you know, I'm sure every other company would feel the same way that he would wrestle with. Just one of my favorite wrestlers in the whole world and one of the best, in my opinion. So I love him a lot, and hopefully we do get to see him again. I think he's got so much left to give as well. He's not like somebody broken, you know, like Marufuji and Noah. He's basically on his last legs. A lot was talked about his anniversary show coming up. It looks like it may be him and Ospreay is a big rumor right now based on stuff that was said. But, you know, a lot of people thought he might announce his retirement. And it makes sense because he's on his last legs. You know, you could just watch him wrestle and know that he's just gone from where he was. Okabayashi's still one of the best. Like nowadays, he has many, many great matches ahead of him if he chose. Like if he chooses to do that, you know, it would be interesting to see if he steps away, because sometimes this kind of thing leads to maybe not a retirement, but instead, I think I'm going to leave my company for a little while. You know, for him, it's a little special case because he's basically a freelancer anyway, like just with his schedule. He's just is Big Japan.
Yeah.
And if they lose him, that would mean so much, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah. The company is definitely in lots of problems when it comes to attracting customers. Recently, they had a Kuroken Hall show that had around 700 fans. But that's very good for them, actually. With
they've done better the last 2 months, actually.
Yeah, happy for them, definitely, but still in trouble.
It's still not good. Yeah, you are right about that. But and losing him would make it worse.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, and they've done a little ceremony on the Osaka Surprise Show this past Sunday, where it looked like a retirement ceremony. But let's hope that he'll be back eventually.
Yeah, for the fans' sake, let's hope he'll be back. Yeah. I did want to say that before we leave, at least.
Good that you caught that, yeah.
Shout out to Okabayashi.
Shout out
to all the fans out there, too. Thank you to everybody who's voted for the award names. We're honoring some great legends. Pretty much everybody that's got an award named after them is one of the top people in Japan at their time, legendary performers, totally deserving. There's no wrong answer, so vote for whoever you want. Go to the MVP especially, because the MVP is the one in doubt right now. Misawa Kobashi, who will it be? It's going to be interesting to see who wears the prestigious title of the Eastern Lariat MVP going forward. So the award's getting a prestige bump. You know, things are going big things. Going to make some graphics when we get through with the show and everything about it. It's going to be a lot of fun. So go to the Twitter at Eastern Lariat. Do that. Follow me at Viva_Zero if you want to hear my other stuff, because we got a new episode of Lucha Talk coming out, talking about some Lucha Libre, Triple Mania Tijuana coming up. In a couple of weeks. CML has got some big stuff. Fantastica Mania Mexico coming up in just a couple of days. You got some Doki on there, got some Naito, got some Desperado versus Mascara Dorada 2.0 on the show, singles match. That's going to be a great match. Lucha Talk's going to be a lot of fun. It was just me and Micro this month. Fredo is busy, but we will talk more about that. Wrestle update, doing reviews of stuff. Forbidden Door will go super in-depth on. Me and Nello De Angelis from Post Wrestling, longtime friend of mine on Yellow, going to be great stuff there. We'll do Money in the Bank next week. Scott finally returns. He, too, was on vacation, much like you, Striga. It felt like 27 people were on vacation this past month. Everybody, I thought, like, Sandre was on vacation as well.
Oh, yeah.
Dramatic Dream Dragons, we did a kind of like a guide, a primer, so to speak, of Dragon Gate. I got to bring up a lot of history stuff. You know, we talked about stuff going on now. I brought up how the old Brave Gate title was like 8 pieces put together originally.
Yeah,
that was great. There. Yeah, like I said, so we talked about it. If you want to know anything about DG going into Kobe World, listen to that show, because there's a lot of good info on there, and there'll be a preview for Kobe World, and DDT has stuff coming up too, so lots of stuff going on. But definitely check out the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat, and Twitter at EasternLariat for all of your Eastern Lariat universe needs right now.
Yes, and that is it for the Eastern Lariat for this time. It was great to be back with you, Dylan. It was great to be back with all the listeners. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.